state of the Pittsburgh Penguins, that Jim Rutherford held a rather lengthy, open, and honest press conference yesterday, and it was still somehow buried that he intends to trade his two-time Stanley Cup-winning goaltender. Wow, right? Good morning to you. Good Wednesday morning. I'm Dan Kovacevic of DK Pittsburgh Sports and the newly reborn DK Sports Radio Podcasting Network, which you can pick up via automatic download on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, Anchor, everywhere that good podcasts are sold, or in this case, given away for free. Rutherford had an awful lot to say, an awful lot of ground to cover, and ultimately, an awful lot of people he wants to move out of the organization and replace with someone else. To fully grasp how angry JR is over what happened up in Toronto, all you need to know is that he even threw into the mix that one or more of the assistant coaches will be gone. Wow. I mean, even though I wrote the day before that in a column that that would be a good move, meaning somebody to work the power play and pointing specifically at Mark Recchi, I still didn't see him coming out and saying it publicly. Like, wow, seriously, Jim? But that's who he is. That's what he does. So in that sense, it wasn't going to be surprising either that he acknowledged what's become fairly obvious, and it has been that way for a while, regardless of performance, that Matt Murray is going to be a goner. Now, he didn't use Murray by name. He said, we're not going to be able to keep two goaltenders. It couldn't be more obvious for a ton of reasons that Jari will be the one to stay and Murray will be the one to go. They're both restricted free agents, but Jari comes way, way, way cheaper. And Jari had, you know, the better season. Jari looked like he was more invested for a better part of that season. In hindsight, which is always the best sight, he obviously should have been the starting goaltender in the Montreal series. I'm not saying that that would have been a singular swing vote in the Penguins' favor, given how they performed overall, but he should have been that guy. And he will be that guy moving forward. He will be the Penguins' number one goaltender when the 2020-2021 season eventually begins. But is that enough? That's what I wanted to bring up today. It seems like everybody's so mad at Matt Murray and his evil glove that we haven't given a whole lot of thought, I know I haven't, to what the goaltending will look like when he's gone. And just so that I don't lie to you, I'm going to blurt out that what made me think of this was having hockey on my television late last night and seeing Marc-Andre Fleury sitting on the bench for the Vegas Golden Knights. Like, hey, dude, want to come back? No, that's not happening. Okay, that would be a massive, massive cap hit, which is the last thing that the Penguins would want. But I'm just telling you that was the trigger point for me because I was thinking to myself, who actually is going to be the other goaltender? Casey DeSmith has signed to an NHL deal. He actually played this past season, all of it in the American Hockey League, on an NHL deal. He was paid the full seven figures down there. It's funny how riding the buses and all the other things that usually people complain about when they're in the minors probably isn't so bad when you're getting a big-time NHL paycheck the way DeSmith was. Is he the backup? I don't think it's that simple. For one, Jim Rutherford has always preferred to have three goaltenders, if not more, in the mix. So if and when Murray is gone, you can expect fully that Rutherford will stay in the market for another goaltender. Emil Lamy in Wilkes-Barre is not somebody that anybody would consider to be ready, or for that matter, to be a reliable number three. Too early in his career. So I think you'll see another veteran brought in of some pedigree, but obviously not of some cost, because the main reason that you're moving Murray is that cost factor and trying to keep the cap down. So basically, it becomes a situation where, regardless of what Rutherford does for backup or for support for Jari, it still comes down to him being number one. I don't know that he has that in him. I think that he does, though. I really do. I feel that this kid, something snapped in him in a positive sense last summer. Once DeSmith had his guaranteed NHL contract and Jari was the only one who could be sent down to the American Hockey League without having to clear waivers, and it was super, super obvious that he was going to be the odd man out. Instead of pouting, instead of woe is me, whatever else, there's nothing I can do here, he put the Penguins in a bind, a good bind, but a bind nonetheless, with an extraordinary training camp. He forced his way onto the roster. He forced Jim Rutherford to move DeSmith through waivers, risk losing him, the whole deal. That's to his credit. That, to me, was the first real sign of that mental toughness and that mental strength that you want from your number one goaltender. You want that player to want to be that player. You want him to have that sense of, this is my net. And he showed that at least within what he could. He had to know that Murray was going to be the number one goaltender, even if he did somehow find his way onto the roster. And that was the case. But funny thing, every single time Jari was put out there to start, and you'll remember it was those early back-to-backers in October and November where he started to show everybody what he was all about. And all of a sudden, we all started taking him a little bit more seriously. And then, when Murray's struggles compounded the difference between the two, everybody got on the kid's side. I mean, the chants switched at PPG Paints Arena like this. And he took the job at least as firmly as he was allowed to, meaning he had to know, and he was right, and we were all right, that Mike Sullivan was going to find any way possible to get Murray back into the number one job. He had to know that. That was constantly hanging over his head, I'm sure. And while his performance statistically dipped off a little bit in the second half, it didn't dip by much. He went from being either second or third or fourth, depending on the specific date, in the NHL in save percentage, to 10th, 11th, or 12th. He was still right up there. He didn't exactly have some collapse or some falling apart span of his season. Rutherford, as close as he'd come to assessing his goaltending in the regular season, was to say that Jari was great in the first half and Murray was great in the second half. And I get that. You want to be, you know, diplomatic and everything else here, but Jim Rutherford's an old goalie. He knows how to evaluate this position. He also knows how to value it, which is why he wants so many different guys, why he begged Jeff Zatkoff to stay just so that Zatkoff ultimately could win Game 1 against the Rangers, you'll recall. He loves Tristan Jari. They all do. They need for him to be the number one goaltender. They need for this season that we just saw to not have been some kind of mirage or some kind of extra special motivation that Jari might have had. They need to be right on this. Because after him, it's a pretty significant dip. So they're going to trade Matt Murray. What are they going to get for him? I don't think it's going to be very much. Remember that when you trade somebody who's a pending restricted free agent, you're not trading the player, you're trading the rights. And in this case, you're trading the rights to a player who has, through his own channels, made known that he expects to be paid at a level commensurate with some of the other top goaltenders in the NHL. That's going to be a turnoff. That's going to be a cause for pause among even the teams that are in the greatest need for goaltending. But never underestimate the lure, the luster that a player with multiple rings has. All teams see themselves as being capable of getting there at some point. And what they want to know is that they can have a goaltender who's been there, who's done it. Murray's been there. Murray's done it. I've been saying all along there would be a decent, not spectacular, but a decent return for Murray. It might have to be the best return the Penguins get this offseason in terms of trades, considering Rutherford also pointedly stated that he's not moving any of the core. But the biggest acquisition the Penguins can make between now and next year, the biggest by far, is to make sure they're getting back the same version of Tristan Jarry that they just had. When we come back, some baseball. Back, Pirates off again last night, obviously, off again today, obviously. These were all the games they were supposed to be playing in St. Louis until the Cardinals clubhouse came down with a case of coronavirus. The Pirates will be back in action tomorrow night in Cincinnati, 4-game set against the Reds, and they'll be doing so without Joe Musgrove in their rotation, since Musgrove felt left out, I guess, while everyone else is on the injury list. He not only had, as it turns out, the ankle injury that was announced as being the reason for his scratch Sunday at PNC Park, but also a triceps issue, which I'm sure, given the body part, is more significant to his health. The fact that the athletic training staff only put him on the 10-day injury list, I guess, is some cause for hope, in addition to Derek Shelton saying yesterday that Musgrove really was put on the 10-day just to cut him a little bit of a break. It doesn't sound serious. But it's obvious that he wasn't pitching his best. That was easy to see. Just as it was obvious that this could have been a part of that. 11 guys are on this injured list. 11. I can't get over that. 3/5 of the rotation now. The top three relievers. And the Pirates are 3-13. And all I can come up with for the remainder of this season is this. Get your good players back to being good players again. Is that asking a lot? I mean, Brian Reynolds is going to walk into Great American Ballpark tomorrow afternoon with 0 RBIs on his ledger. No matter what you think of RBIs as a stat in the new age, it's not good to have a 0 there at the 20% mark of any season, shortened or otherwise. the disintegration of the entire top four of the batting order remains to me the most distressing thing about the Pirates' performance to date in 2020. I don't think it's the biggest reason that they're 3-13. To me, the injuries still are. You can't lose half your pitching staff and expect to compete in any way, shape, or form. But the most unsettling event to date has been the disappearance of these four hitters. And really, I keep giving Colin Moran an exception here because he hit the five fairly early home runs, but he hasn't done much in a while either. And Gregory Polanco's done next to nothing. I mean, in fairness, he missed a big chunk of the short camp with his own coronavirus designation, but just the whole offense has just been such a massive disappointment. And that has to change. When you're talking about the Pirates, whether it's for 2020 or for the future, what Ben Cherington needs most is valuable assets. That doesn't necessarily mean tradable assets or that he would have any intent to trade them. But he needs valuable assets. He can't just be sitting on a pile of nothing. And right now, that's what that lineup looks like. That has to change more than anything else. I can't for the life of me figure out what's wrong with these guys. It would be different if we could get into the clubhouse and, you know, we'd had our normal access, because then you can start asking a lot of questions, including on and off the record, and find out, well, I'm missing this or we're working on that or whatever, but these times don't allow that. So we're just kind of left to shake our head from afar, just like you are. But I feel comfortable in saying this much. There's no one at any level of management or the coaching staff who's got to be feeling more pressure than Rick Eckstein. And if that sounds unfair, so be it. But Rick Eckstein was the one who all of these hitters swore by last year. They gave him tons of credit for their approach, the way they would shrink the strike zone. That was something they would actually show with their hands to me when they would describe it. The strike zone going from this very large vertical rectangle to just something that you couldn't even put two hands around and say, that's it. That was my spot. I would lock in on that spot. And if the ball wasn't there, even if it was going to be a strike, I wasn't going to swing at it. But if it was in that area, I was going to take a merciless hack at that thing. And I was going to hit it hard. And we saw that, in particular, from Newman, Reynolds, and Bell all through 2019. I mean, with some patches of inconsistency. And the same thing goes for Adam Frazier in the reverse. He was mostly not doing it, but he also had that one ridiculous tear in midsummer. That has to come back. I can give them all the excuses that are out there. Hitters around baseball have struggled off of these brief camps. They've remained behind the pitchers, as the spring saying goes, meaning the real spring, not this one. But that time is ticking. I mean, we're now getting to the point where you're going to be a month into this shortened season, and that excuse, not that they're using it, but I've brought it up myself, and when I've brought it up with Derek Shelton, he's agreed with it, that he's seen timing issues all over baseball. These guys have to figure it out, and they've got to start belting the ball again. If that happens for the remainder of this month and into September, I think the Pirates can come away with this otherwise awful season with something to look forward to going into 2021, because they can say, all right, we know we have half a lineup. Whatever that was to start the year, we got through that. We worked through it. It was a slump. It was a weird camp. It was a four-month break before that that nobody wanted. But if this drags on with these four guys, that is your actual worst case scenario for the Pirates in 2020. Way more significant than anything that happens to them in the standings. I mean, it's not like it can get any worse than 3-13. They've got to figure this out. And the guy specifically who has to figure that out is Rick Eckstein. Remember, Derek Shelton's an old hitting coach himself. And he inherited Rick Eckstein based on the recommendations, primarily, and I'm not guessing at this, of the hitters themselves. They really wanted him back. They lobbied for Eckstein even while the manager searches, plural, were going on under two different sets of management. It was always clear that Eckstein was going to stay. That's because the players wanted him. And if the players fall apart under his tutelage the following year, I'm not feeling all that inclined to keep the guy. But we'll see. I don't want to get ahead on that. I'm just saying they need to start hitting. When we come back, a little bit of football. Cannot wait till Monday. That is when the Steelers will begin padded practices at Heinz Field. They only get 14 of those, if you can believe it, before the regular season starts for them in mid-September in East Rutherford against the Giants. But more to the point where I'm concerned, they'll be letting us evil media types in. And we'll actually be able to see things for ourselves and have training camp feel a whole lot more real. You know, see something more to Ben's throws, for example, than whatever gets chosen for us on the highlights, all of which look like Peyton Manning's most beautiful aerials from early in his career. And, you know, that's what I would send out too. You know, why not? This segment of Daily Shot is always brought to you by the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. During normal times, 1 in 7 people in Western Pennsylvania are food insecure, including 1 in 5 children. Not knowing where your next meal is coming from can be a scary thought. And now, during the pandemic, the need for food is that much greater. If you are in need of food assistance, or if you'd like to support the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank, visit pittsburghfoodbank.org. Spell out those first three words, pittsburghfoodbank.org. $1 is all it takes to provide enough food for up to 5 meals. Steven Nelson hooked up with us on a call yesterday from Heinz Field. He's fun. Most football players, I should say, are really into the defiance thing. You doubted me and you didn't think much of me. Steven Nelson's actually got it going on for real. He was statistically one of the very best corners in all of the NFL. And even people in Pittsburgh aren't aware of it. It's crazy. You know why? Nobody threw his way. When he was in Kansas City, everybody threw his way. And he had 4 picks. But he also gave up a good number of passes and a good number of yards. And a lot of times people will just look at that, or they'll just remember the plays where you got burned. And it ends up an unfair stigma. Well, the Chiefs letting Nelson go and the Steelers getting him turned out to be a big blessing, because his efficiency over on the right side, his ability to take any challenge one-on-one without needing a whole lot of help, has freed up Minkah Fitzpatrick to do his thing and go ball hawking, and it's also made Joe Hayden a better corner, as if that was possible. The combined secondary, if you add them all up, and I know everybody picks on Terrell Edmunds, but he's got his own role to play, and it's not nearly as sexy. And no, he's not a good center field type corner, and I don't know that he's ever going to be one. So again, he's one of those that when he gets beat downfield, it looks really bad. But no one complains or even remarks when Edmunds is closer to the line of scrimmage and makes a solid tackle that's supposed to be made. the players on the defense themselves will value that a lot more than the rest of us on the outside. Overall, it's a defense that, I don't know, I guess my favorite thing about it, at least from what I've been hearing out of this camp from these guys so far, is that they still feel that it can get better. Listen to this from Nelson.
It'll be a tremendous change. I think we can build on that and get a lot better. You know, give the other team will feel like they have to, you know, put the ball in the air or whatever that may be. You know, gives our big guys up front to rush. You know, get sacks, get strip sacks, and you know, on the back end we'll be able to get interceptions. And so I think it'll work hand in hand for us.
I respect the stance. I respect the approach. More than anything, I respect the performance of this defense in 2019. But if you listen carefully there, Nelson is referring to how much better the defense can be if the offense is also way better than it was last year. And he's right. He's right. Because if the offense, the Steelers' offense, can put other teams behind, put them on their heels, then that opponent becomes that much more predictable. And this already dynamic defense that had 38 takeaways and all those sacks and all those pressures and all that other chaos that they created can become that much more effective just because the other team, the other side, becomes that much easier to read. I love that. We don't think about football, at least I don't often enough, from the standpoint of the symbiosis between a good offense and a good defense. Because you see different groups of people taking the field. Because you see the way we saw in 2019, the Steelers have this horrendous offense and this spectacular defense, it's easy to divide them. But we really shouldn't. I really shouldn't. When you think of it that way, these guys can become that much more dangerous, that much more. Wow, do I dare even think that they could? Nah, they're not going to top 38 takeaways. And if anything, that number is probably going to go down just through happenstance. There's a lot of luck that involves in the ball bouncing that way. It's not a round ball. But could they get even better in different ways in terms of shutting opponents down, in terms of familiarity with each other, considering that everybody other than Javon Hargrave is going to be back? And Minka won't be popping in mid-season the way he had to last year. That's fun to think about. A lot of fun. And I think it's very realistic. Can't wait to get in there. I can't say this enough. That's not some Homer-ish Pollyanna thing. It's not based on the fact that the Penguins just had this massive disappointment and the Pirates are exactly where the Pirates are. I just happen to think the world of what this football team has in place right now and what its potential is. And once I start laying eyes on that and get a chance to write about it and share some more observations like that, I think you're going to see even more of that excitement come across. Looking forward to it. At 11 a.m. today, the newest Pirates pod with Noah Hiles and Alex Stumpf will be up preparing you for the series to come in Cincinnati. Thanks so much for listening to this. And remember, please, automatic downloads. Thank you.
Your front door, your car, your gym locker, your gun. Safety is a habit. Learn more about how to keep guns safe and secure. Visit ProjectChildSafe.org.